There are a number of initiatives that OPM Director Barry, your successor, has undertaken, and there are a lot of them I'd like to talk to you about. Where I want to start is the hiring process. And we've probably done 8,792,512 shows on Federal News Radio over the years about the hiring process and addressing it and streamlining it and on and on and on. Director Barry has said recently on our air and a number of other outlets that he would like to do away with KSAs. He would like to go to a cover letter and resume system like the private sector uses. And nobody disagrees that that is a noble undertaking. But there are some folks that think that it is a lot more complicated and less likely to happen than the director thinks it is. What are the nuts and bolts of moving out of that system to a system like Director Barry would like to do?
In my view, the acceptance of a fundamental change in the system is very, very difficult to move through the bureaucracy. If you think back to the early 90s, I think it was actually 93, perhaps 94, OPM Director Jim King did away with the Federal Personnel Manual. Well, I think the only people who actually got rid of it was OPM. Everybody else kept it just in case, and they wanted to continue to rely on it, and they wanted somebody with all of the bureaucratic answers. I think this is a bold move that Director Barry has undertaken. I think it is a fundamental shift from the way things are done. I think it has to happen. You're losing good recruits by the dozens, if not the hundreds, just because people can't wait for the process to play itself out in the federal government. And even in a bad economy, that's the case. So imagine when things get better, when people have choices, when college grads can go work for the federal government or a really great foundation or a nonprofit or even a for-profit organization. Something has to happen, and it has to happen very quickly if the federal government is going to recruit and retain the talent it needs to meet 21st century challenges. And John is right on the mark. Let's start doing things the way the rest of the world does it. And let's start at least taking that first step so that we're not creating another barrier for an applicant. Let's do the change inside the government. Let's, you know, let the bureaucracy and the people who are in charge of this system change. Now, we've got to make sure that happens inside the federal agencies.
I don't think anybody disagrees with the goals that Director Barry set out, and I think we all understand the issues that are involved. What are some of the barriers within the government, you think? Where are some of the points of resistance that he may be dealing with from people who are saying, I kind of like the way the system works because it works for me personally, and so I'm going to push back on this?
And I actually think you've articulated it exactly. I don't think even that people will push back, but I do think people who have been successful with this system, whether they are in the HR office, the Chico's office, or whether they are a hiring manager or supervisor, a hiring official, they just may think that this is just fine. So let's just keep going. I have 10 years till retirement. Why do I have to change everything now?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that they are not perhaps getting the range of applicants that they should have. There are important challenges facing this government, and they're going to need top-level talent. And a lot of people are willing to make financial sacrifices and a lot of other sacrifices, including investing time in the job hunt. But why we want to make people do that and run the risk that we'll lose the best applicants is just beyond me. I just think It's the way we've always done it. And you hear that in every kind of organization. It is not just the federal government or federal employees who feel that way. You hear it everywhere in this society. So it's not only changing the rules, which in many cases Director Barry can do with his administrative authority, but it's also going to take a cultural change. And his relationships with the cabinet secretaries are going to be a tremendous help with that. The relationship he has with OMB that also can spread and preach culture change is another important asset he has. You know, the president wants him to make the federal government cool. That's probably the biggest challenge he has, but he has the first lady he can tap into. It's not going to be easy, but any big change like this has to be accompanied with a culture change. That takes time anywhere you are, never mind if you're dealing with the nation's largest employer, but it'll happen because it has to happen.
You talk about those relationships with the other members of the administration and so forth. Mm-hmm. And let's step back from this conversation about the hiring process and look at that piece of it, because he has the same title that you had, but the structure and where he fits into it seems to be tremendously different than other OPM directors in the past. How does that look from your perspective?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but the reality is that anyone who takes on leadership of a federal department or a federal agency, even though they may not have an administrative or an organizational development background, quickly comes to understand that their greatest asset are the people who go to work there every day. And so even Nobel Prize-winning cabinet secretaries understand that they better get really good at human capital issues before long, because their success is going to depend on it. And I think Director Barry has garnered such respect for his vision, for his energy, for his attitude, for his willingness to collaborate, that they're seeking out OPM to help them with these challenges. So I think that is well on track, and I think Director Barry has a very, very good handle on the relationship side of that job, but it's got to filter out from the Secretary's office down through the Chico's office and into the HR people and into the line managers who are making these day-to-day personnel decisions, and get those people convinced that change can work and that a new way of hiring and bringing people on and searching for talent can be successful.
You used a word referring to talent earlier in this conversation that I think gets lost amidst the ongoing discussion about the hiring process, and that word is retain. Do you think we don't spend enough time talking about keeping the good people once we've got them in the government?
I do think that. I understand that society, that our society is going through a change, and that people do not expect to work with the same employer their entire careers. I know that, unfortunately, federal employees, often in the public eye, are not as respected as they should be. So I think the average person on the street may say, well, why do we want them there for 20 or 30 years? They're not really doing that great a job. But the fact is that we have to target the kind of people who we want to stay. And we want to make sure we focus on what will help them stay. And that may be, for this new generation, ramping up the mobilization aspect of federal employment. The fact that you don't have to stay in one federal agency your entire career, that you can move around, that you can go somewhere for a year or two or for a special project. I think we have to work very, very hard at keeping people challenged at the mid and higher levels, and hopefully giving them the opportunities that they need to stay involved, stay challenged, and stay committed to this employer.
I had a chief human capital officer tell me not too long ago off the record that the reality of the situation in 2010 is that people just aren't going to do it the way they've done it, but that there are a number of personnel officials, HR officials all over the government at various levels that don't seem to have gotten that yet. Is there something that OPM as an organization can do to kind of, I guess, help usher these people into the mindset of the worker in 2010? Because I think your observation is correct that the idea that somebody will start as a GS5 and do that job and keep getting promotions and so on for 30 years and then retire, those days are gone, but it seems like not everybody really either understands it or wants to understand it.
Yeah, what you're describing, Francis, is interesting. Now that I have a little 10 years of perspective on this and I have a little bit of difference, that isn't just an issue with the federal government. I think our entire society is wrestling with what do we do with this younger generation? What do we do with kids who are on the computer watching TV, texting, and on the phone while they're doing their homework? You know, how are you going to keep them challenged in a work environment? I mean, that's a challenge for everybody, whether you're the private sector or the federal government. But I do think that this culture change that's needed throughout the government is going to have to include this type of awareness, because there's a tremendous opportunity. I mean, think of the work that you can get out of somebody who can multitask half a dozen things at once.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that would be fantastic if we could find a way to channel that for the greater good. So how do you teach people to be tolerant of this, to understand different kinds of work styles? When I think back 10 or 15 years when I was at OPM, there was a tremendous resistance to telecommuting. Managers, line managers, supervisors could not understand how they could ever supervise someone that they didn't see every day. And now, sort of the mystery's gone out of that, and it's much more expected. You know, 15 years is a long time for that sort of necessary change, but it is proof that we can do it, and it can be done, and that people who are looking for these talents, I'm thinking the intelligence agencies, DOD, NASA, the science agencies who need people who are technologically proficient, who understand science, they're going to make the adjustment pretty fast, and then hopefully they can enlighten everyone else in the government on how to be successful with this new kind of worker.
Your perspective is interesting because, as you say, having been out for 10 or so years, you have the ability to compare and contrast the private sector and the nonprofit world with the government, and that's a perspective that not a lot of people have, and I imagine it's comforting for people who are hearing this conversation to hear you say, hey, it's not only in the government, because I think those of us that pay attention pretty heavily to what's going on in the government have a tendency to get bogged down in that and be wistful about the way things work, supposedly, in the private sector. The grass is greener syndrome, I think.
Sure. I couldn't agree more. I think the private sector and the federal government have a lot in common when it comes to human capital and HR issues. There's so much overlap. I think we can learn a lot from each other. It's just that at the federal level and within the federal government, the problem seems so big, because there's so many people involved. I mean, it's easy for me to tackle an HR issue where I work now, but the idea of moving this giant organization, you know, is just beyond anybody. But you have to start somewhere, and that's where I really support Director Barry. I mean, small steps. You know, small steps, just always, always moving in the direction of making progress, creating change, helping people adjust to this new culture in the workplace.
We've talked about the before, the hiring process, and we've talked about the during, the retention piece of it. And so let's talk a little bit about the after. As you have your perspective of being away now for a period of time, do we have the kind of package in place that is attractive to somebody to say, hey, this is a place I do want to spend, maybe not in the same job, maybe not even at the same agency, but moving around, this is the place, this is the umbrella organization, at least, the broader federal government that I want to stay till it's time for me to stop working.
I do think that the federal government is an incredibly attractive employer. There is an author who I admire greatly named Dan Pink. I served with him in the Clinton administration, and he's just written a book called Drive. And it's, he looks into what motivates people and what gets them to produce. And he cites a number of studies that show that once somebody can feed their family, pay their bills, you know, once the basics are taken care of, that additional money often does not equate to greater production or productivity. So what he looked into was the fact that people have to be motivated by a greater good. And that's where the federal government can out-recruit, out-attract any employer in the world. You know, I mean, it's an extraordinary draw. And I move around with Chamber of Commerce folks and Board of Trade people. And what's interesting in this area is that the private sector, now that they've started hiring again, is concerned because they're losing applicants to the federal government. And law firms that have gone on hard times are actually seeing lawyers leave on their own, or big four accounting firms, to go over to the federal government. Part of it, I suspect, is that it's a difficult economy and people want a steady job. But there has to be more than that, because every single one of these people is making a financial sacrifice. So it is the motivation. It is this sense of purpose. It is the fact that you are helping improve the world, improve the lot for your fellow citizen. And no one can beat the federal government at that. So I do think that this is a pretty special place to work, and folks are recognizing it. Add to that the problems we're having with the healthcare system and the private sector. You know, I don't have the kind of coverage I had with FEHBP anymore. And I suspect that a lot of people look at that as well. The benefits, you know, while not rich, certainly are adequate and stable and can be counted on, as opposed to a private sector employer who may be forced in a year's time to drop their health insurance or stop matching funds in 401ks or retirement accounts. You know, there's a lot about the federal government that makes it a very, very appealing employer.
I'm really grateful for your time, Janice, to talk about these issues, and I'd like to wrap up with a kind of a what-if scenario. Mm-hmm. Let's say Director Barry calls you on the phone, you sit down for a cup of coffee with him, and he says, Janice, I'm allowed to do any one thing that I want to improve the HR situation in the government, and it can be about anything. It can be about hiring. It can be about retention. It can be about streamlining something or changing something. I can do any one thing that I want. Nobody has to approve it or anything, but I'm not sure what to do first. What do you think? What do you think?
He has to cut down the amount of time it takes to get hired. That's what I would say. And that's a very, very complicated issue, but you know, people need to be able to apply for a job and get a call back in a week, one way or another. They cannot just keep sending resumes, applications, online applications, whatever it is, into the black hole and never know what happens. And that, I think, would go a very, very long way to getting the right people in the door, and then he can start working on the things he has to do to keep them there, like pay issues and performance issues and, you know, letting go of poor performers and all those other sticky wickets that are such a big challenge. But if you're not getting the right people in the door, none of it is going to make any difference.
And all of those sticky wickets are all issues we'd love to follow up with you on at some point. Thank you very much for your time today.
I am more than happy to be in touch whenever you need me.